Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. From the Pack West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I've got actor-comedian Michael Rappaport in studio. He is at Helium Comedy Club tonight, 8 o'clock. Get a ticket for this at heliumcomedy.com. Saturday night, I love the late shows. They have two 10 o'clock shows, Friday and Saturday night. That should catch your interest. Michael, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
You've been to Portland lots of times, so
have
you?
No, I haven't. No? I was here once before doing press for, I don't remember what it was, and this is my first time, like, you know, having any short, long stay here. So I'm excited to be here. I was excited to go see the Trailblazers play last night, and I'm excited to tear it up at the... At the Helium Comedy Club this weekend.
Blazers might use you right now.
Yeah, listen, cry me a river. I'm a Knicks fan. Okay, so I don't want to hear, like, oh, Blazers might use. You know, you guys tasted Western Conference Finals, and, you know, I'm a Knicks fan, so I don't want to hear, oh, we're 4-6. Whoop-de-doo. Listen, I got bigger problems with the Knicks.
Why have the Knicks been so bad? Is it ownership? Is it Dolan?
It's ownership. Well, I have to at this point say it's ownership because that's the only thing that hasn't changed. We've had coaches, we've had Phil Jackson, we've had GMs, we've had players, we had Carmelo. The only two things that have been around that haven't changed are Steve Mills, our president of basketball operations, and James Dolan, who I think is a stain. He's a wart on the bottom of our feet. That won't go away. That it's just there.
Well, when Oakley had his problems with Dolan, I thought Oakley's a guy I rooted for. I liked Oakley.
Everybody loves Oakley.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you hated Oakley, you had to respect him, and he is our guy. And that was a crazy situation, and that was I think really indicative of the relationship that Dolan has with the players and the fans and the city of New York.
Because it was a security guard, right? That he was like, tried to kick him out or wrestled him out?
Yeah, it was security. It was security guards, yep.
Yeah, you can't treat your players like
nope,
that.
That's
like a mascot.
Especially Charles Oakley.
Yeah. You grew up in a radio family. Dad and mom, right?
My father was the manager of a radio station in New York City called WKTU. My mother wasn't. Don't believe everything you read on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I grew up hanging around the radio station when I was a kid. Yeah, in the 70s and the 80s, I was the first radio station in New York City to play disco music. So it was cool. And you know, it was when they put the record on the needle, and they would tell me as a young kid, don't come over here. Don't come anywhere near here, because if you bumped into the record would stop on live radio.
Was there any part of the entertainment that you do? Born there, sparked by dad being there?
Nah. I mean, you know, he was just a business guy. You know, I mean, I fell in love with music through it, which, spawned whatever it spawned. But at the time, it was just where he worked.
Yeah. And you obviously were a sports kid growing up. You were in a movie with Tupac. Everybody wants me to ask you about that.
Okay.
Is that the question you get? Like, do millennials want to know that? Or what's the question you get?
I mean, I get all sorts of questions about all sorts of things.
What was Tupac like?
I mean, I didn't spend that much time around him, but he was very charismatic, very magnetic, very electric. And there was just you knew he was special.
Yeah.
And while he was alive, you knew he was special. You knew he was a special talent. He just had an it factor, and he was very. I guess the word is just charismatic. There was just something about him, and he had just had like a special thing about him, and he had obviously had a purpose, and you know, I mean, I was such a fan of his music, and then even more of a fan, I think, of his acting when he first came out in the movie Juice. I was so impressed with that. And, I mean, he just was special.
You started, you're a teenager when you get on stage for the first time doing comedy. Is that right?
Yep. Started out when I was 19 doing comedy. Yep.
Is there, because there's an East Coast, West Coast thing with rap. Was there an East Coast, West Coast thing with comedy?
No.
Come on.
No.
Like, are New York comics harder?
Like, it, you know, Chris Tucker's Atlanta, but I mean, I don't know who the, like, West Coast comedians are. Nah, there's no comedy beef. They're just comedians.
Wouldn't it be better if there was, though? Like, if the East Coast...
We could create it right now.
Who are we calling out?
Well, I don't know who the West Coast guys are. I have to think. I think more of the East Coast. I know there's tons of Los Angeles comedians, but we could come up with something.
John Lovitz.
John Lovitz, yeah, we could do John Lovitz.
Call him out.
Yeah, John Lovitz, you know, and get him and Chris Rock fighting. That would be good. That'd be dope.
Yeah, I feel like comedy's always been a place where you could go to make fun of things that you can't talk about anywhere else.
Right.
But now we saw with the Oscars, Kevin Hart gets in trouble for stuff that wasn't even that bad. What did you think of all that when it went down?
The Kevin Hart thing I thought was ridiculous because, listen, everybody has said things in the past. You know, there's got to be room for people to apologize, to grow. You know, things Eddie Murphy, you know, his first special, Delirious, you know, he said things that wouldn't be acceptable today. You know, and people need to be able to, you can't just like try to cast away everybody who said things, because everybody has said things, and to front like you haven't is I really, that to me is more offensive than anything, you know, a lot of things you could say. So I thought it was unfair. He apologized before he got the Oscar job. He had already dealt with it, and I think that, you know, it was a shame. It was a shame that had happened to him, and that was, you know, something that he has nothing to do with me. That's even brought up because it's such a hot topic of where we are at socially, because I think I don't try to hold myself higher than anybody, and I think that, like I said, everybody has said things, and you know, whether it's humorous or in all seriousness, you have to, you know, have room to apologize and forgive, especially when, you know, they're just words,
and especially in comedy where we sort of go in with the expectation that, like, okay, a lot of this isn't literal.
You know, you did the old pie in the face, which was like, you know, the traditional, most old fashioned, you know, way to get a joke, the pie in the face. You know, people would say that's bullying now.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Charlie Chaplin movies. You know, he's tripping other people. He's tripping people. You're laughing. You know, now they'd be like, oh, you're making fun. It's crazy where we're at. So you got to just, you know, trust yourself and know what your intentions are and let the chips fall where they may. Otherwise, you know, we'll all be just be kind of like sitting around and there'll be nothing to laugh at anymore.
You have done a great job, you know, sort of bouncing between forums and being a stand-up comedian, being an actor, having serious roles, having funny roles. Like, where are you having the most fun? Is it on stage or you like acting?
I have the most fun performing. You know, acting on television and in movies, you know, it's like kind of like a sprint. You know, so you do short little spurts of when you're actually working. You know, my podcast, I love doing that because it's sort of like a free for all, and I love doing stand up comedy, and I you know. It's the second sort of round of when I'm doing it, because I stopped doing it for a long time, but it's a lot of fun. It's a never ending puzzle. There's an endless amount of areas to cover and go into, and you know, I'm excited about performing at the Helium Comedy Club. It's my first time performing in Portland, and you know, I know Portland you know, has a great sense of humor. And, you know, it's very, you know, open-minded and stuff like that. So I think, you know, we're going to have a good time.
It's the best comedy club in the area. Probably the best in the state, I would think.
Right? Good,
You'll be there tonight, 8 o'clock, Michael Rappaport. Friday night and Saturday night, 7:30 and 10 o'clock shows. I like the 10 o'clock show. Is it a looser show because it's late, a little more nightlife? Parents have all gone to bed.
It depends. I will tell you this though: the Friday 7:30 show, no, the Friday 8:30 show, the Friday 8 o'clock show, and the Saturday 8 o'clock show are sold out, which I'm excited about.
So we have to go to 10 o'clock.
But you got to go to 10 o'clock. Friday is going to be popping. Tonight's going to be popping. There's some tickets available. You know, for me, it just depends. It depends on how I'm feeling. It depends on the audience. I vibe off the audience. You know, we'll see. You know, like, that's what I like about it. You really can't really dictate how it's going to go, or if the audience, you know, sometimes audiences are quiet and they've had the time of their life. Sometimes they're laughing their butts off, and, you know, and they're having the time of their life. You just got to go up there and try to, you know, make it happen and bring, you know, as much energy and as much, you know, freshness as you can each time you go on stage. And I love that.
You get heckled, like, you've probably been heckled growing up in New York. It's probably just what you did to each other. But it's...
Well, we called it snapping in real life. But I haven't been heckled on stage yet. Like, not... I've had people throw out requests or, like, talk about this, talk about that, talk about this. But I haven't had anybody with a traditional heckling yet.
Do you feel like you need one of those moments? Like, because... Or well, you'd be okay going...
It could be what it could be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm a trained professional. Yeah. I got the mic, so I got the loudest voice and the last word. I don't encourage it, but it's part of the form. And as long as it's in good spirits, I'm open to it.
Colin Kaepernick's getting a tryout finally.
Good.
What do you think's going to happen? Somebody going to sign him?
They should. I mean, these backup quarterbacks that are in the NFL, you know, it seems to be the most important position in the NFL is the backup quarterback. You know, I hope, you know, he looks good. You know, I know he's been very consistent about working out, and it would be great. I think it would be a great way to move forward. I think, you know, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, you know, plenty of teams, especially going into this half of the season, you know, whether it's Seattle or Lamar Jackson, and you know, plenty of teams could use a freewheeling quarterback who can make a play, because when you have a second string or possibly a third string quarterback, you need a guy that can make a play. And while he was playing, you know, when he was at his best, he could definitely, you know, make a play. And it's like what he did that Super Bowl run season seems to be, you know, these guys are taking it to the next level with Deshaun,
yep,
Watson and Lamar Jackson. And even like in little spurts with, like, you know, Daniel Jones, who isn't as athletic as those guys, but like, they're like, well, he can move his feet. You have to be able to move. The rules are changing. You know, Cap, it would be a great way to move this story forward.
Are you a Giants or a Jets fan?
I'm Giants.
Yeah. You had some good years.
We
right?
beat the Patriots twice in the Super
yeah,
Bowl.
You had some really
so
good years.
I'm a die yeah. happy.
You grew up on Lawrence Taylor, though, right?
Phil I love Sims, Lawrence Taylor. Yeah, those are my guys.
You get to meet those guys, like, you know, later, and, you know, you're a celebrity, they're a celebrity thing.
I met Phil a bunch. He's cool. Did I ever meet Lawrence Taylor? I don't know if I've ever met Lawrence Taylor.
I bet he'd be fun to party with.
That's, well, I mean, come if on. You're into that, I mean, I don't think I can hold up to that. You know, he's not like party, it's not like cupcakes and balloons. But I think LT's good right now. But I definitely talk about Lawrence Taylor on stage. I explain why he's the best football player and needs to be in consideration of the best athlete of all yeah. time. Yeah, I mean, those Giants were exciting.
I like when he's mic'd up when you watch the NFL films.
Yep.
He's talking about their mom, and he, you know, he's doing it, that's fun.
Yep, yep, yep. I LT was my guy. I mean, he was like a superhero for New York fans.
I love that, because at that same time you probably had you were a Mets fan then, no?
I'm not a big baseball guy, but I was a Yankees fan.
Yeah.
But we had the Dwight Gooden and the Strawberry and all this, but I'm not a big baseball guy.
Yeah. Man, so that was good. And then now you got Jets, Giants, everything's bad. What's going on?
Everything's bad, but it'll turn. I mean, the Yankees just made it, you know, close.
Yeah.
The Giants and the Jets will figure it out. We got the Brooklyn Nets, which, you know, are looming to be good. We got Kyrie, the dribbling machine. And, you know, New Yorkers don't. We want our teams to win, and we take it on the chin, but it doesn't demoralize our everyday life for some reason. We're able to roll with the punches as New Yorkers through the thick and thin of our sports fandom.
What do you think of load management and all that in the NBA?
I think that if a star is not going to play for a non-specific reason, the fans should be allowed load management, and we should be able to unload our tickets if you pay for them. And there should be an explanation given by the player or like their uncle. And you know, I think it's ridiculous. I think that especially when there's young guys. Like, the one who should be taking load management is LeBron James. If anybody deserves load management, it's LeBron James. And I'm on record, you know, breaking his chops. But, I things are changing. You know, this isn't the olden days. And it sucks when you drive out or you save your money to go see whoever you're going to see and they don't play. You know, it worked for Kawhi last year. Obviously, they won the championship, and we'll see how it plays out this year. I think it's getting a little bit blown out of proportion because it was just that so far it was Kawhi that one game. But it's been around with him for a while now. So, but he's got that ring from last year. So,
do you ever get starstruck? Because like you meet LT, you meet somebody today. Like, who is it that Michael Rapaport is? Somebody you grew up watching as a kid? Walks into the room.
Well, I mean, there's people that I've met that I'll always be excited to meet. You know, like actors like Robert De Niro or, you know, Samuel Jackson. Like people that Denzel Washington, I have tremendous respect for. Athletes, I get more excited about, I mean, there's so many dudes, professional football players, basketball players, current, former, that I would get hyped to see. I was hyped seeing CJ McCollum and Dame play last night in person. I had never seen them play in Portland, so it was dope to watch them.
Yeah, they're just not playing well. It's after last year, everybody's so excited.
Yep.
Come into this year, and, you know, you've been through that.
Yep.
A lot of chatter, and they're 4-8.
4-8. But it's 4-8. They haven't played 20 games yet. Yeah. They'll be all right. Nurkic will be back. Like I said, you got to cry me a river with the 4-8.
Go
the
see
Knicks
him.
Are 2-8.
Go see him tonight.
It's about 4-8.
8 o'clock. Tomorrow night, you'll have to go to the 10 o'clock show. The 7:30 show sold out. And on Saturday night, 10 o'clock show as well, heliumcomedy.com. I just got a couple minutes before I cut you loose. Do you get political in your act? Do you?
Yeah.
And how do you deal then when you're in a crowd that disagrees with you? Because that's become a thing.
Keep it rocking. Keep them laughing. Try to be honest. Like I said, I haven't had too many. There's been a couple of things with the politics. They just get quiet. You know, my thing with comedy and myself and definitely the politics, everybody gets it. While I'm talking about the president, I'm even making jokes about myself. When I'm talking about the Democratic candidates, everybody gets it. If you get offended by everybody getting it, yo, ta-ta, see you later. Because it's just, you know, you can't, you know, like, I think I'm pretty fair and, you know, I get the joke. And like I said, if you know, I start with myself. I break my own chops myself and it's clear cut. So if that's, I don't know, we're not at church. We're not at synagogue. Yeah. We're not at the, in the mountains praying and anything. It's a comedy club. It's a comedy club. So, you know, if you take it too seriously, you need to go to the serious club.
Yeah, I've always surprised by that. People who go and they'll go, oh, he was so offensive. I said, where did you think you were going?
I don't know where you thought you were going.
Yeah.
Where did you think you were going? You thought you were going to see the Dalai Lama? You thought you were going to get a little keys to life
coaching.
Yeah, you ain't getting no life coaching from me. You get that heat, you get that disruption, but you're not getting life coaching.
Hey, for young comics who might be listening to this, what advice do you give to, like, because people come to me and they go, I want your job, and I don't know what to tell them. What do you say?
For anything that has to do with show business, I say don't dip your toes in the water. You either have to need to do this or go find something else. Like, there's no, you know, like any business, you know, it's not for everyone. It doesn't come easy. And there's ebbs and flows to everybody's career. And it can't be something that you're unsure about. Like, if you're unsure about it, figure it out and then come back to it. But you have to be ready for the goods, the bads, and the ebbs and flows of show business. That's the only business I know. And I'm sure it's like that, you know, in every field. But for when people ask me that, I don't even talk about talent and all that stuff. I talk about that it's a mindset. There has to be a tenacity to you. So I think every artist has that in them, whether they articulate it or not. They might play shy and coy. Trust me, they want that light on them, whoever it is.
Michael Rapaport, Helium Comedy Club, tonight, 8 o'clock. Go see him, heliumcomedy.com. Friday night and Saturday night, the 10 o'clock shows are where you need to be. Thank you, Michael Rapaport.
Appreciate
you, man.
You.
Good luck to your Knicks. Leave it here. Great stuff from Michael Rappaport, who's in studio. If you missed any of that, grab the podcast on Apple Podcast, iTunes. He brought an entourage with him. He had a couple of handlers with him. One of the guys hangs out with him all the time. And he said something off air as they were leaving to Rappaport that I thought was interesting. I want to talk about for a second. He said, I was going to commercial break. We're wrapped with that interview. And by the way, what'd you guys think of him?
I love Michael Rappaport's energy. He's so passionate about his sports teams, man. It was fun.
Yeah, I feel the same. When you start talking about sports, he like really lights up and has a lot to say.
He, I felt like, look, he's been interviewed a whole bunch of times. I mean, it's clear he's been interviewed a whole bunch of times. So for me, interviewing him, I want to keep him off balance a little bit. I want to surprise him a little bit. I want to rattle him. I want to get him out of that. He knows he's on air. He knows he's trying to sell tickets, all that stuff. So he's used to the same old, dumb old interview that he gets everywhere. So I tried to mix in more of the business of comedy, the Kevin Hart stuff, which is ridiculous, by the way. Kevin Hart lost the Oscars. You know what he said? His joke was, more or less, to paraphrase, his joke is, it's a really hard thing to be gay. I hope my son doesn't have to go through that. And he turned it into a comedy bit, which offended some people because of the way he said it. And then, you know, it was said at a time where 6 years later or 10 years later, people are super offended by, you know, what was said. And he came out and he said, yeah, you know, that's probably a joke I shouldn't have made. But it remains true. Like, look, that's a hard existence. Like for people, I think you would talk to a lot of people who are LGBTQ and say, hey, is that harder than growing up straight? And I think a lot of them would tell you, you know what? There are some challenges that it creates. So I think that was his joke. And Kevin Hart lost the Oscars for it. So I'm curious, what do comics think about that? Because he's got to go up and do a routine knowing that 6 or 10 years later, something that's funny now might not be funny anymore.
Yeah, I really like what Michael said about how there has to be room for forgiveness and you have to have the right to forgiveness. Like people growing up with technology and social media, you post things that won't age well and maybe your mindset changes, maybe you're joking, whatever it is, but there has to be that space for forgiveness.
But Kevin Hart wasn't allowed that. It's too big a stage, too safe, you know, have to go without a host. So I'm curious what he thought about that. And then as soon as you get him flowing that direction, you bring him back the other way with, you know, Lawrence Taylor. Would he want to party with Lawrence Taylor and the Blazers? And then you talk a little bit about being on stage as a, you know, as a kid. And I started to take him towards his parents. His dad was a radio executive and he hung out at the station. But Michael Rappaport was 19 years old when he was on stage for the first time at a comedy club. 19 years old. And then, but I really didn't see him until, you know, I saw him as an actor because I was watching the movie. I think probably about the time I saw him was like The Basketball Diaries or Beautiful Girls. He's been in a whole bunch of things, but that's about when I saw him. It would have been like, you know, mid-90s. Michael Rappaport comes on the scene. And he wasn't getting like great roles, but he was in those movies. And then now you kind of see what he's done with it and what he's parlayed it into. He makes no apologies for like the comedy that he does. He makes no apologies for the fact that he does offend people at different times. But I do think when you go to a comedy club, you better don't go in there expecting to hear everything that you want to hear. Like part of the fun and the beauty of going to a comedy show is the surprise of going in there. And John Lovitz, who was on this show, what, 2-3 weeks ago, month ago maybe, I went to see his show. He required everybody to put their phones away. If you take your phone out, they take it away. And in part, he wanted the phones away because he didn't want anything that he said in that comedy show taken out of context. Because he said some super offensive things in making a joke about how offended people get. And he, you know, he would say things that are totally, you can't say that, that's inappropriate to say, but preface it by saying, you can't say this, it's inappropriate to say, and then go on to kind of show the discomfort in the room with him saying something. And after the show, there was one lady on social media who just didn't get the joke. She didn't get that it was a joke. And it was the Thursday night show, and she spent all day Friday tweeting at John Lovitz saying that was offensive, is inappropriate, boycott him. He said this, this, and this. And I thought to myself as I watched that act, it's not what he said. It's not at all what he said. It would be like him saying, just to give an example, if you're not getting the metaphor, it would be like him saying slavery is acceptable. That's something you can't say anymore. You could have said it in, like, you know, 18 whatever, and nobody would have blinked an eye, but it's a horrible and offensive thing. And somebody going, ooh, Canzano said slavery is acceptable. It's not at all what he was saying, but he's doing it under even, I think, an even more liberal format. It's a comedy show, okay? And he was making fun of everybody, himself included. And to Michael Rappaport's point, I thought it was interesting. But his handler, as he left the interview, turned to Michael, and he said, that was different. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, it just wasn't the same old questions. He says the same questions about, you know, what do you talk about in your show? What's it doing? Or how do you like being in comedy? Or who's the most famous person you met? And I said, well, yeah, that's not the interview I want to do. I'm listening to what Michael Rappaport's saying, and I'm reading his cues, and I'm asking questions I want to know. And then the question about Tupac came from Adriana. Because she wanted to know. Were you satisfied with his answer?
Yeah, that's cool.
Because she just wanted to know what it's like to be in a movie with Tupac. And then Michael Rappaport kind of looked at me like, are we going to do that interview where you're going to ask me about Gwyneth Paltrow? You're going to ask me about, you know. But Tupac is like a mystery.
Yeah.
Do you think if Tupac were alive today, would he be more or less famous?
Would Biggie also be alive? Or because I feel like they're a... It's like a package.
Would they be more
there?
Or less known?
They would be less known. And I'm not, I mean, Tupac's a legend. He'd still be a legend. But again, it's like the Kurt Cobain thing. There's just that mystery, that air, that reverence, the what could have been, the legend gone before his time. And that builds up with the decades that they've been gone.
I think it's different than sports, because I think in sports we're so driven on numbers, statistics and numbers. And so when a career gets cut short in sports, we say, could have been. And people always bring up Roberto Clemente. Oh, could have been, would have been. But they forget, like, Roberto Clemente, I mean, we're talking about a guy.
Yeah, 3,000 hits.
Yeah. It wasn't like in year three, young Roberto Clemente got, you know, died, and we never got a chance to see what he could be. This was a guy's a 15-time All-Star. Okay? He's already there. But in sports, when a young player, when Len Bias dies, we say it's a tragedy. Oh, it's a tragedy. His career cut short, whatever. We then kind of move on. He doesn't get mythical status. But when a musician or artist or even actor gets cut down like that, I think you look back and there's an elevation factor that happens. And I think Tupac was going to do big things, great things, creative, Grammys, movies, Oscars, would have been a producer by now, would have been... But would he have been bigger than Kim Kardashian?
That's the thing is he was phenomenal and he had a budding acting career, but he there's the tragedy, the what could have been. He never had an opportunity to make a bad album. Does that make sense? So everything was just perfect and then it was taken away from you.
Yeah, and I keep going back. I think I want to say Tupac was like 25 when he died.
Think so.
So Adriana, I mean, it's like you're there.
That's terrifying.
Well, I don't mean it. Yeah, he was 25 years old.
Yeah.
But everything that he had accomplished happened by about your age.
Well, are you trying to cut me down?
No, and then the legend is, you know, the legacy of all that. So, you know, let me just list his awards. Here's what he did. He won the Favorite Rap Hip-Hop Artist Award in 1997 at the American Music Awards. He won a Rhythm and Soul Music Award in 2005. He did not win any Grammys. He was nominated 6 times, no wins. He won the Music of Black Origin Award in 1996 for California Love. He never won an MTV Music Award, nominated 4 times, 0 wins. He won 2 Soul Train Awards, and that's it. And he has mythical, not mythical, he's on, you know, like when you do a recognition of name recognition, Tupac is top of the list. You know, if you're 20 years old or older, you know Tupac.
You know, all that shows me is how meaningless all those awards are. Oh, he doesn't have a Grammy. So what?
Yeah.
So what?
All right, you got the bald-faced truth. Punch It audio coming up. Ken Go of the Oregonian is going to talk to us about Alberto Salazar and the saga that has engulfed track and field. If you haven't paid attention to that, it is an interesting little fight that is going on between some former Oregon projects.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the bald-faced truth.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.